A very good evening to our listeners. This is Spirit 88.3 FM, and the program is Issues of Life. I'm your host this evening, Eben. We thank God for keeping us through the week and bringing us to the end of it. Indeed, it's always the grace of God that keeps us going. And we are grateful for the gift of life. This evening, this is our second edition for the year, and we thank God for how far it's brought us. Last week, I started talking about the need for the Word of God in our lives this year, and I'll be continuing from another angle this evening. And then I'll first start off with the news, some major news I picked for the week. These days it's quite a struggle because there are a lot more things happening to talk about, but just have to pick some, of course. And you know, we are overwhelmed by events happening that you can directly link to Bible prophecy. And you know, last week I was talking about the fact that we are one generation that is seeing far more than any other when it comes to the issue of Bible prophecies relative to events and the happenings and all that. Indeed, this should be a blessing to those who understand the Bible and those who study and those who are watching for the coming of the Lord. And it shouldn't be something to scare you. You see, the issue is not to scare you, but to let you know what is happening. And knowing what is happening then puts you in a position of being wise and being able to understand the happenings around. So if others are confused and others are complaining and others are afraid and are worried, the believer shouldn't be in that same position. The believer should be at the point of knowing that this is the true word of God that we are seeing, and giving that person hope and excitement, looking forward to what is ahead. So that's the good part of understanding Bible prophecy and seeing it in real time in our lives. You know, truly speaking, if the Christian leaders of old, even the Bible, the prophets and the apostles, wish to see this time because they were longing to see it, but they even didn't see it. And people wish to see Bible unfold as we are seeing it. And unfortunately, and sad to say, we are seeing it and most don't make any sense out of it and don't really have any understanding and make any meaning out of it. It's quite unfortunate that Christians are not really even bothered or interested in Bible prophecy again. Yes, it can be due to the fact that years back in the 80s, there were a lot of hyped, you know, talk and nothing happened and all that. So it's made even some pastors careful about talking about these things. What if we say it and it doesn't happen, nothing happens? No, nobody is talking about date setting, that you set a date that will, Christ is coming on blah 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 date and all that. That is one of the errors that we've had in the history of modern Christianity. Not technically even modern, because if you really study church history, years back, even centuries back, there were instances like that where people set dates and all and nothing happened. But the fact that something is fake or you receive a false information does not negate the fact that there can be true information. As a matter of fact, there is falsehood because there is truth. Truth should be the fundamental thing we should seek and not be discouraged by the falsehood we've exposed to or we might have been exposed to in times past or before. See, so if there is falsehood, and because you've experienced falsehood or you've heard of it before, so you lose interest in the truth, in seeking the truth and understanding the truth, then that is quite an error. So let's understand the dynamics of these things and be believers who are led by the Spirit of God and are taught by the Spirit of God. Because you see, you cannot be wrong when you are in this situation where it's the Spirit that leads you, it's the Spirit that teaches you. In that case, you are in His will. So you cannot be in the falsehood. But when we move by our carnal minds and we move by our own imaginations and thinking, then that is where wrong doctrines can set in, and this is where the misleading and the errors also now becomes an issue for the body of Christ. Alright, so let's get started with some of the news in the course of the week. We have strong magnitude 6.8 earthquake rattles Alaska, and this is felt by many across the region. There was also powerful magnitude 6.6 earthquake off the coast of Cyprus, also felt across Israel. And these were the two that I had in my notification in the email. But if you check the US Genius website, I've not checked, but I can guarantee that you have the whole week, you have more than 100. But these are the big ones that were recorded. Then US warns Russia is sounding drumbeats of war against Ukraine as crisis talks end with no breakthrough. So a senior US official warned on Thursday that the drumbeat of war is sounding loud following a week's worth of diplomacy between the West and Russia that wrapped up on Thursday. The effort ended without clear breakthroughs over the tens of thousands of Russian troops amassed on the Ukrainian border, leaving prospects for future diplomacy and de-escalation in doubt, as Russian officials suggested they could soon turn to military options. Both US and Russian officials sounded a pessimistic note over the talks following Thursday's meeting in Vienna at the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE. It was the third session that capped a week of intensive meetings that the United States and its NATO allies hoped could spare Russia to pursue a path of de-escalation and diplomacy, rather than mobilizing tens of thousands of Russian troops whose presence has swelled along Ukraine's borders. But Russian authorities or officials reacted with frustration and impatience coming out of the meetings, suggesting they were poised to abandon discussions over the US and NATO's refusal to entertain Moscow's key demands, which is a guarantee that Ukraine will never be permitted to join NATO and that the alliance roll back its expansion in Eastern Europe. The US and its NATO allies have repeatedly said that such proposals from Moscow are non-starters. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybkov suggested the talks had reached dead end or a difference in approaches because the US and NATO would not address Moscow's demands about Ukraine never joining NATO, he said, according to Russian state media TASS. Rybkov said he didn't see a reason for two sides to continue talks, even though the US has suggested they would continue beyond this week. Following Thursday's session, the US ambassador to OSCE, Michael Carpenter, told reporters that the drumbeat of war is sounding loud and the rhetoric has gotten rather shrill. We have to take this very seriously, Carpenter said of the massing of Russian troops along the border with Ukraine. We have to prepare for the eventuality that there could be an escalation. Polish Foreign Minister Zbigniew Rau, the OSCE chairman, warned after Thursday's meeting that the risk of war in the OSCE area is now greater than ever before in the last 30 years. Diplomatic efforts this week, which included separate sessions between Russia and US, NATO and OSCE, were aimed at pulling back Russia from the potential invasion of Ukraine. But Russia did not commit to pulling back the more than 100,000 troops and now along the border, and the Russian military conducted live fire exercises along the border this week as the talks were ongoing. Indeed, this is one of the big things that this year may be a game changer to the peace in the world. And from the look at things, it doesn't look good, because the next news item says Ukraine struck by cyber attack as Russia advances more troops. So this was just, I picked this news Thursday evening. It says that Friday evening. So the Ukraine was hit by cyber attack, splashing a warning across government websites to be afraid and expect the West, whilst Russia, which has amassed 100,000 troops on its neighbor's frontier, released pictures of more of its forces on the move. Reuters reported that the cyber attack unfolded hours after talks wrapped up with no breakthrough between Russia and Western allies, which fear Moscow could launch a new military assault on the country it invaded in 2014. The drumbeat of war is sounding loud. Michael Carpenter, U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, said at the close of talks on Thursday. Russia denies plans to attack Ukraine, but says it could take unspecified military action unless its demands are met, including a promise by NATO alliance never to admit Kiev as the capital of Ukraine, including, as CBS News stated. But it is that as a result of the massive cyber attack, the website of Ministry of Foreign Affairs and a number of other government agencies are temporarily down, the foreign ministry said overnight. So the clear warning from Russia, cyber attack on the website of Ukrainian government sites is, get ready, we are coming. And it's obvious, because the US also confirms it. The next news, this also was Friday's news, which is quite current, which is current actually, Friday. Yeah, so actually, in another news, US was also warning that Russia is actually planning to create an event and use it as a reason and a basis to attack Ukraine. And so that was the warning that US gave Friday, which is quite a stark warning. So it looks likely things are going to really turn upside down when it comes to this Ukrainian activity. Now the next question is, if Russia indeed invades Ukraine, what will NATO do? What will the US do? Are they going to sit and watch as Russia invaded Crimea and took Crimea to be part of its land? Or are they going to just back on sanctions? And for which, I mean, sanctions doesn't move Vladimir Putin, because he doesn't care. But the issue is, would they respond militarily? But if they are to respond militarily, then we know that clearly this is a clear world war situation, because once NATO and US decides to confront Russia in Ukraine, then China, Iran, North Korea will also join their friend Russia. And that is a clear world war situation. And when you have a big force, or two big forces, Russia is, when it comes to military wise, it's a huge, you know, until the Cold War ended, Russia was virtually, Russia and US were the main two forces at loggerheads. So the Cold War period, that was this whole tension between Russia and US. But after the Cold War, Soviet collapsed and all that, things have been normalized. But the military strength of Russia is huge. Leading, one of the leading in the world, to get along after US. And, exactly, I've not checked the statistics, but they have a huge force to deal with. They also have a big nuclear power country, nuclear ammunition and all, they have it. So if they are close ally China, which is now even the super force that the US is even really worried about its strength, because the investment the Chinese government has made into military issues in the last few years has scared the US, and US keeps complaining that it's too much and all that. But you know, these are all statements which makes you see how worried the US government is when they see others really growing militarily and all that. So, well, you know, there are some things we can't stop it, because Bible prophecy is clear that there will be wars and rumors of wars, and you know, these are all things that must happen if indeed the Bible is true. The least we can do is to pray that God will deliver us from such things, the effects of such things when they are to happen. But to stop some things through prayer, no, we cannot stop Bible prophecy through prayer. But we can pray for the effects of it on us, be affected. We can pray for that, its effect on us or whatever it is. Perhaps if you live there, the Holy Spirit can guide you in the area there you'll be affected, that you should move out, leave the place and all that. Those are the things believers can pray for, that God should deliver us from any evil regarding some of these things. But that's not a good way to start a year. And then we go to U.S. warns Iran of severe consequences if Americans are attacked. And apparently, you know, the Iranian government sent a major warning last week that they would attack U.S. on their soil within their country. And, you know, this has worried some, or it's worried people, because the U.S. border situation under this government is the worst they've had. People just walk through the southern border into the country, and they come in their numbers, and the government is even supporting them and moving them to distributing them across the countries, the other states and all. So, because this government has intentionally allowed that to happen. So now the question is, have these people come in without them being seen? And of course, it's a big yes, because they can come in without they being seen. They can come in and now assemble their bombs, and then at the right time, they will strike wherever they want to strike. So the U.S. has shot itself in the foot, because they've allowed their open border system under this government to escalate to the point where thousands of people are entering the country every week through the southern borders, and they can't be stopped. Because even when they arrest the people, the government order comes, release them, and also clearly now they are worried that they have the enemy within. And this is where it becomes very worrying, when your enemy is within your country and they can strike wherever they want to strike if they choose to. But this is in retaliation to the killing of their General Qasem Soleimani during the Trump era. So they said they will retaliate. So this is what U.S. is responding, that Iran will face severe consequences if it attacks Americans, the White House said on Sunday, including any of those sanctioned by Tehran for the 2020 killing of General Qasem Soleimani in a drone strike. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said Iran's sanctions on Saturday came as Tehran's proxy militias continue to attack American troops in the Middle East. We will work with our allies and partners to deter and respond to any attacks carried out by Iran, Sullivan said in a statement. Should Iran attack any of our nationals, including any of the 52 people named yesterday, it will face severe consequences, unquote. Iran on Saturday imposed sanctions on dozens more Americans, many of them from the U.S. military, and over the 2020 killing of Soleimani. Iran's foreign ministry said 51 Americans had been targeted for what it called terrorism and human rights violations. The step lets Iranian authorities seize any assets they hold in Iran. But do they have assets there? But the apparent absence of such assets means it will likely be symbolic. It was not clear why Sullivan's statement referred to 52 people when Iran said it had sanctioned 51 people. Iran's sanctions included U.S. General Mark Milley, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. It also included former White House National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, Soleimani, commander of Iran's Quds Force, the overseas arm of the elite Revolutionary Guard, was killed in Iraq in a drone strike on January 3, 2020. And this was ordered by then-President Donald Trump. A year ago, Iran imposed sanctions on Trump and several senior U.S. officials. So, that's also for it. Alright, so enough of the war, rumors of wars and all that. Let's get into media ignores dramatic rise in discrimination against Christians in Europe. And amid the din of pandemic reports, restrictions and frenetic news cycles, several topics of concern frequently get lost in the noise. The persecution of Christians around the world is one of these. I recently wrote an essay for the Europeans conservative on the brutal ongoing massacres in Nigeria, where Christians live faithfully in the face of nearly constant violence and the silent complicity of their own government. In November, the Observatory of Intolerance and Discrimination Against Christians in Europe released an alarming report detailing 70% increase in hate crimes against Christians. Did you read that on the news or hear about it in the mainstream media? Of course not. Christians, as always, are the acceptable victims and convenient scapegoats for the elites, and thus violence against their actions or against their persons or properties are ignored. To discuss this report, I spoke with Executive Director Madeleine Ellsberg. And below is the conversation. What are the findings in this new report that stand out to you the most? What is most alarming? And then goes on to say that there are three specific findings that I would say stand out the most and presumably also the ones that are the most alarming. To begin with, almost all of the observed countries, except for Sweden, where we still do not have enough data on hate crimes, have a significant problem with hate crimes against Christians. The number of hate crimes against Christians in Europe increased by 70% from 2019 to 2020. Arguably, most of the cases are a form of vandalism against churches and Christian buildings, but that does not mean that this trend is not worrying. Public acts of criminal violence against a specific religious group and their property have an immense signaling power of intimidation, and it also normalizes violence against the group in the wider public. This can lead to a negative downward spiral. Just imagine when people today start to think it is somewhat okay to set a church on fire. Maybe over the time, they might also think it is okay to physically hurt a Christian as well. Physical assaults are likely still rare, but not non-existent. This development needs to be stopped immediately, and it must be appropriately addressed by the responsible political and societal stakeholders. Second, the level of self-censorship among Christians in Europe is relatively high. This is due to various reasons. The level very much depends on the historical, cultural, and political context of each individual country. Some countries are so used to censor themselves that they do not, some Christians are so used to censor themselves that they do not even recognize they are doing it. This contextualization is especially visible in Germany between the East and the West because of their long political separation before 1989. Also in France, it is common to keep your faith most of the time private due to historical and political reasons. Despite the national context, fear plays a major role when it comes to self-censorship, and reality sadly shows that this fear is not completely unreasonable. In the UK, numerous Christians are facing court trials because of what they said publicly in accordance with their faith. Some lost their jobs, others were deplatformed or denied of an academic education. Especially, university students know very well what they are allowed to say or not, in order to not get bad grades or to be marginalized by their peers or even professors. Several Christian pro-life groups have been denied association at their university unions, and some have received death threats and their property was damaged. Yes, self-censorship as such is not a bad thing. It even has healthy function in a social setting, but it can quickly turn into crippling dynamic that neglects a true diverse public discourse. And then third, the suffering of Christian converts with a Muslim background is tremendously under-researched, and they absolutely do not receive the support they need and deserve. In these cases, we do not only talk about vandalism, but actual and serious physical and mental threats. If the person is a refugee and a Christian at the same time, the situation is even worse, as the person faces pressure not only from their family and local community, but they also have to fight the religious illiteracy and bias of state authorities. The threat of Christian converts and refugees by European state authorities mirrors the overall blindness of Europe to the suffering of persecuted Christians in the rest of the world. Otherwise, they would not deport a Christian to a country in which conversion to Christianity is considered a crime worthy of death penalty. This tragic issue is not just ignored by the government, but also by the media. With such research, we really hope to be able to shed more light on the issue, to raise more awareness, and to ultimately help those people in need. And that is true for those who have been listening to this program for some time. Sometimes we hear about, you know, the persecution reports I read, and how Christian churches and Christians are intimidated, and some losing their jobs for putting, you know, when last week I read a woman who was sacked for wearing a cross pendant on a chain, because as a nurse they said no, but others are allowed to wear all other things, religious things, but except the cross. I mean, there are many cases, people being intimidated in the universities, as the reports were saying. So these are the realities when it comes to Christian persecution. Okay, a quick one. You know, technology and advancements in science is getting to levels which is becoming scary and worrying. And this week, there was a first of such that said U.S. surgeons just transplanted pig hearts into a human patient for the first time. In a medical first, so this is the first time ever in the world, doctors transplanted a pig heart into a patient in a last-ditch effort to save his life. And the Maryland hospital said on Monday that it's doing well 3 days after the highly experimental surgery. According to Associated Press, while it's too soon to know if the operation really will work, it marks a step in the decades-long quest to one day use animal organs for life-saving transplants. Doctors at the University of Maryland Medical Center say the transplant showed that a heart from a genetically modified animal. So look at it too. It's not just the normal pig. It's a genetically modified one. Can function in the human body without immediate rejection. The patient, David Bennett, a 57-year-old Maryland handyman, knew there was no guarantee the experiment would work, but he was dying, ineligible for a human heart transplant, and had no other option. His son told the AP, Associated Press, quote this, "It was either die or do this transplant. I want to live. I know it's a shot in the dark, but it's my last choice. unquote. Bennett said a day before the surgery, according to a statement provided by the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Quote again, it was either die or do this transplant. I want to leave. I know it's a shot in the dark. Yeah. So, okay, that's what I just read. Then the PBS stated that there is a huge shortage of human organs donated for transplant, driving scientists to try to figure out how to use animal organs instead. Last year, there were just over 3,000 heart transplants in the U.S., a record number, according to the United Network for Organ Sharing, which oversees the nation's transplant system. Quote again, and then you see, if this works, there will be an endless supply of these organs for patients who are suffering, unquote, said Dr. Mohammed Mohiuddin, scientific director of the university's Animal to Human Transplant Program. You know, this raises a whole issue of, is this acceptable to God? Well, I won't get into this debate, but is this how God really planned it? That time will come that parts of animals will be removed and put in human being. Is that the will of God? Is that the plan of God? Well, I mean that's something open for serious debate. But the issue is, you see, this thing opens up for, you know, for those who have heard about transhumanism, you know, they are really been planning things, fusing technology into human beings, putting chips in human beings, you know, having this cyber humans that we've been seeing in movies, Robocop and all these things. You see, the agenda is to play God. In the words of some scientists years by and all that, it's as though they want to be like God. They want to play God. So now they are going to levels which is becoming a bit worrying, because this next news item, which I also got on Friday, a mind-reading robot was tested on humans with a 96% accuracy. And this is seriously worrying, because Chinese scientists have built a wearable robot that can reportedly read a human mind by monitoring brain waves and muscle activity. Developers claim the machine was able to recognize human intention with 96% accuracy. This is serious. So with this, you know, this world, that means now your mind can be read. So it's like you are arrested, they catch you, they put this system on your mind, on your head, they fix it on you by force, and it can read your mind and your intentions. Come on. This is, you see, human beings are now playing God. To read the mind of a fellow human being, it's something, I mean, it's, you see, and RT News reported that testing the device on factory workers, researchers from the Intelligent Manufacturing Innovation Technology Center at China Three Gorges University apparently found that the volunteers did not need to issue verbal commands or perform gestures when they needed to grab a tool or a component. The developers noted that the robot reacted almost instantly, picked up the required object, and placed it on the workstation, according to the South China Morning Post news. Then the paper added that the team had published its findings in the domestic peer-reviewed China Medical Engineering Journal. The researchers could not be reached for additional comments. You know, it will seem good, and the basis will be to use it for good work, to help, let's say, a paralyzed person to be able to perform activity and all that. See, normally, yes, there are scientific things which, oh yes, we are doing for a good cause. But then the other side, the bad cause is where the issue is, where people now take something that was meant for good to be used for evil. And that's where the whole worry is, because we are in an evil world. with evil governments and world leaders and all, and I mean dictators, power authoritarians, you know. So when technologies like these are coming up, then it becomes a worry, because then privacy and human rights and rights to self-preservation, rights to this, your rights and rights and rights, then can be really impeded and abused. Okay, so let me finish off news with this one that says, I thought this was the last one. Okay, sorry, let me just continue with it. Then it says, people uncertain about their relationship with God, more likely to suffer mental distress, according to a study. And this is quite revealing and also worrying at the same time. I'll talk about it when I finish. It says, in the first chapter of the book of James in the Bible, Jesus' brother warns against approaching God with unsteady faith because of the instability that comes with being double-minded. Now, a new study suggests that people who are uncertain about their relationship with God are more likely to experience mental distress than other believers. Quotes, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God. I mean, James 1:5, on what's the, let him ask God that giveth to all men liberally and abradeth not, and it shall be given to him. But let him ask in faith, nothing not wavering, for he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. James declares in the scripture, for let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And in attachment to God and psychological distress, evidence of a curvilinear relationship, that is the research, published in the Journal of the Scientific Study of Religion last month. Researchers W. Matthew Henderson of Union University and Blake Kent of Westmont College conclude that, quote, anxiety or lack of certainty about one's relationship with the divine represents a threat to psychological well-being. The study used national data from the 2010 Baylor Religion Survey, including more than 1,600 Americans who believe in God. The study wasn't limited to just Christians, but respondents were predominantly Christians. While earlier research has shown that religious practices like prayer and religious service attendance are pretty protective of people's mental health, unquote, Henderson, an assistant professor of sociology at Union University in Tennessee, told the Christian Post that not much data was available about how people's specific religious beliefs affect their mental health outcomes. Quote, we thought that was a pretty glaring weakness because belief is such an important part of religious practice, unquote, he said. And we were especially interested in beliefs about God. So using a concept called attachment theory, the researchers set out to examine how people's specific ideas about God and their relationship with the divine impact their mental health. And then goes on to say that this attachment theory examines child care bonding as a central motivator of human behavior and a primer for future interpersonal relationships. Young children engage in proximity-seeking behavior, drawing close to primary caregivers to feel emotionally comforted, supported, and safe. In this capacity, caregivers provide infants with a secure base from which to explore the world, the researchers noted. The style of attachment a child develops with a caregiver serves as an internal working model, a collection of neurological, biological, emotional, and social stimuli that coalesce to prime expectations for future relationships. And then goes on to say, attachment theory which has been used to provide insight into the dynamics of many relational concepts, proposes that internal working models influence the nature of an individual's relationships throughout childhood and into adulthood. Researchers have also used it to examine the relationships between secure attachment style and measures of depression, distress, coping, psychological functioning, and other mental health outcomes. Attachment to God, summarily, is a way to measure people's dispositions, like emotional dispositions towards God. So if you feel like God is consistent and responsive, usually we call that a secure attachment to God. If you feel like God is aloof and distant and you can't really rely on Him, that is an avoidant attachment style. And if you are just not really sure, that's kind of an anxious attachment, Anderson explained. What we found with the curvilinear relationship was higher levels of psychological distress were predicted for the people who were in the middle of this avoidance secure measure. However, people who had a more secure or confident relationship with God and those who had a more distant relationship with divine experienced much lower levels of stress. That's not really what would be expected based on previous attachment to God research, Anderson said. The highest levels of psychological distress were people who were kind of in the middle there, and that's where you get this kind of curvilinear hump. And Henderson added that if people who are uncertain about their relationship with God have access to the support of a healthy church, it could help alleviate some of their distress. So a healthy church is very important. If people are uncertain or they are going through a bit of crisis personally in their lives, and if their crisis tends to also intermingle with their view about God, the more they are doing that in isolation, the more I think that their beliefs are going to lead to anxiety, he said. But if they can do it in a healthy congregation, it's probably going to lead to greater stability in the face of hard, stressful moments in their lives. The scholar contends that the study's findings reveal the sheer complexity of belief in God and its impact on mental health. What I first encountered looking at the research was that you had to believe that God was a certain way as for it to correlate to good mental health, that there was this way to believe in God that was healthier than others, Anderson stated, and I just don't think we are necessarily saying that. You can believe a lot of different things about God, and it can correlate to pretty good mental health. Anderson pointed to something we call the Westboro effect, based on the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. The congregation is a controversial family-run church that describes itself as an old-school Baptist church. Adhering to the teachings of the Bible, the church preaches against all forms of sin. The fundamentalist ministry founded by Fred Phelps, who died in 2014, was branded by the Southern Poverty Law Center as arguably the most obnoxious and rabid hate group in America. The church's slogan, "God Hates Fags," is the name of its main website. They've got really aggressive views about God, and that God is very angry and hateful and judgmental, he said. And presumably, their beliefs about God, I think in popular parlance, would assume they are probably not healthy mentally. If you believe God is that angry, that might lead to a lot of stress on you. I have no data to back this up, but my suspicion is that mentally, they might actually be doing okay, because if you believe God is super angry but doesn't hate you, you are good. So, because finally it says, we were more convicted that based on the findings, beliefs about God are best understood contingent to the social situations that they are in, to the way they help people make sense of their social settings, Anderson added. People's relationships with God, the way they perceive God, those change over time, especially as they run into these stressful life events which are inevitable. So, in summary, it's all about how you stand with God, your relationship with God. It really makes a lot of difference because in recent times, suicide rates have been high, and even among Christians, you read number of news in the US and all, pastors, pastors' wives committing suicide and all. And you see, and even more research is showing that the onset of COVID, stressful and depression moments have increased, and suicide rates are going higher, even in some societies. But you see, this particular research is of interest to me because, you know, during the COVID lockdown, church closure period, I did a little survey in the country, and the respondents, were about close to 50% that said they didn't get communication from their church leadership, that's pastors, so their group leaders and all didn't contact them, check up on them. You had close that number, that percentage, also saying that their faith, their level of relationship or their Christianity went down. Oh, so it's surprising though, but it's also worrying because even if we look at the situation carefully, church attendance across most churches have not gained the same levels pre-COVID era. So it means when the period of COVID, the lockdowns, the church closures and all, and this is not even the US, yesterday I saw a statistics about 25% of, Christians that were surveyed said they are not going to church anytime soon. They are not going back to church anytime soon. See? So in Ghana, we have the similar situation. There are people who have stopped going to church. They may still be Christians, but they've stopped going to church. For whatever reasons, for some, the church didn't help. When they were in need, during the lockdown, the church closure, they gave food to some and they didn't give them some. The people have all reasons. There are some who just think the church is not doing well enough now, so they won't even go, they will serve God on their own. People have their personal reasons. But the bottom line is, we had COVID, I see COVID as a test case for bigger things to come. So if under such conditions, you have the faith of people wavering and people giving up on God, people doubting God, and like the survey is saying, the relationship aspect, it's very critical, and it's my hope and prayer that you see any pastor or deacon or elder, Christian leader listening to me this evening. My prayer is, let's build people up spiritually. Let's ensure they are really being built up. You see, because as I repeat, COVID was just a warning shot. We are going to have far greater challenges in the world coming this year, going forward and all, which is really going to test the faith of people, which is going to be stressful for people who are not grounded in the word and grounded in the Lord and in their faith. So, see, then this report says, talks of the fact that, you see, the mental health issues come up. So, you see, so these are the things when the person doesn't know or is not well grounded in the faith, is not being taught to grow well in the faith, and then situations come all of a sudden, then now those who are not that strong begin to have issues. And this mental health issues and depression, and then eventually the ultimate being suicide, is a real issue. We cannot sweep it under the carpet. We may not have experienced it that much in our churches and our Christian groupings, but it doesn't mean we should not pay attention to it, because as I keep saying, and I'm saying again, greater problems are coming into the world, which will demand that the people, the Christians, be strong in faith and have a strong relationship with God, or else they will run into this stressful, depressive moments, which can cause them to even leave the faith, depart from the faith and all. So the bottom line is, it's time we ensure that our relationship with God is taken to another level. We get stronger in the Lord and really know God better. Because you see, If we don't strengthen our relationship with God now, that is possible to do without. I mean, we are now under less stressful moments, and they are not big, they are not issues that are hindering us from going to church, hindering us from gathering in fellowships to pray together and all. These are the times to establish ourselves well in the Lord and grow our faith and our relationship with Him, because the truth is, a time is coming that we may not have these opportunities. I mean, who thought? When churches were closed for 3 months, no one thought. We're just there. President comes to talk Sunday evening, fellow Ghanaians, churches are closed for 3 months. They didn't give the dates closed until further notice. You see, so suddenly something happens that stops us from meeting and gathering and fellowshipping. Some were able to do it in ways online and all these things, and some were having cell meetings and all that. But it's important we start thinking ahead, because you see, when something like that happens again, how many, if you're a leader, church leader, listen to me, how many of your leaders, your followers, your church members can stand? How many? You see, so let's focus more on establishing the people well in the Lord. You know, I mean, these are not the times for this prosperity stuff, you know, because you see, when situations like that arise, then you realize that if you've not been taught well in church, or you yourself, you've not grown in the Lord yourself, to know God yourself, to have a standing relationship, a daily relationship with God, then you realize, then at that moment in time, prosperity messages mean nothing to you. So let's get the priorities right. And to the listeners, we ourselves as believers should not also depend on the church to let us grow or to help us grow. We should seek the growth ourselves. We should decide to grow ourselves. We should decide to mature, know God, have a better relationship with God ourselves. You see, we don't need someone to lead you all the time. If you've been a Christian for some time, you should know how to grow yourself. Okay, the next one, sculpture. Christians likened to end times beasts, no longer on display at the UN. This was somewhere late last year where they placed this beast-looking sculpture, which had a lot of symbolism in the. And let me read it. Goes on to say that weeks after it was first displayed on the Visitors Plaza outside the United Nations headquarters in November, the controversial, quote, Guardian for International Peace and Security, unquote, sculpture, many Christians liken to a biblical end times beast, is now gone. Initial reports, the Christian Post suggests that the sculpture was removed from the Visitors Plaza in late December due to complaints from the public. Stefan Jurek, spokesman for the Secretary General, explained, however, that the display was temporary and was removed as scheduled. Quote, the statue you refer to was a temporary exhibit organized by the Permanent Mission of Mexico to the United Nations. It was taken down as scheduled and anticipated on December 20th, Jurek said in a statement to CP on Monday. Conservative Christians' frenzy over the artwork began brewing after the United Nations tweeted an image of the exhibit on November 9th, prompting references to certain scriptures in the Bible, including Daniel 7:2-4, which highlights a vision of beasts representing governments, one of which is depicted with a body of a lion and wings like an eagle. Christians also called or cited Revelation 13 verse 2, which symbolically refers to a beast given power and authority by Satan. Further reference was also made to Thessalonians chapter 5 verse 3, which speaks of the end times when people say there is peace and security, only to experience unexpected ruin. So the sculpture, donated by the government of Oaxaca in Mexico, and created by artists Jacobo and Maria Angelis, is likely not the harbinger of the apocalypse, some Christians presume. Then goes on to say that the fantastical fusion of features in the controversial sculpture from both jaguar and eagle is known as an allegory, representation of a mythical spirit guide found in Oaxacan folk art, along with vibrant color markings, and usually have a combination of features such as horns, antlers, wings, and fins. But prior to the display on the of the Guardian for International Peace and Security at the UN, it was on display, and this is where my interest is a lot. It was on display along with 11-foot dragon, underlined dragon sculpture, at the Rockefeller Center from October 22nd to November 9th, as part of the Lemos Motors or Day of the Dead celebrations. You know, so you see, this is all symbolism, but it's clearly, anyone who understands these things knows that yes, it's a message to the church. You see, we should understand the times we are in and the symbolism that associates with some of the things that we see. So we have this beast which people made reference to, you know, the Bible or the verses I quoted and all. But just before it came to that place in the UN, it was also placed beside a dragon. And we all know the dragon, what it symbolizes. You know, so, and dragon is also in the book of Revelation and all that. At least our minds should be drawn to the symbolism we are being pointed to. At least. Especially if you look at all that is happening, where you see the system is building, the Antichrist system is really building up fast before our eyes. You know, we should understand the symbolism that these things are giving, a coded message to us. Interestingly, see, when it comes to this coded messaging and all, in the occult realm and among the globalists, they also understand the things they do. And they also know the times we are in. We shouldn't think they don't know the times. They even know it's even better than believers. Let me say it that way. The globalists who are shaping the world towards the Antichrist system with all their doings and things and all, they know the times we are in better than most believers. They know. They know what they are doing. They know what they want to achieve, and they know what is ahead. You see, unfortunately, most believers are asleep. So we have a situation where the systems are forming around us. Those who are forming the systems know why they are forming the systems they are forming. And the ones who the system is forming against, most are also not aware about it. And we are sleeping. We are in slumber. God help us to understand the times we are in. Then, Pakistani Christian man imprisoned 4 years on false blasphemy charges is granted bail. So the brother of a Pakistani man granted bail last week after spending years in prison is pleading with Pope Francis and other international leaders to evacuate and grant his brother asylum in a Western country as concerns about his health and safety persist. On Thursday, the Supreme Court of Pakistan granted bail from Nadine Sampson, a Catholic who has been imprisoned in Pakistan for 4 years on blasphemy charges. Sampson's brother, Shakil Anjum, a U.S. citizen, reacted to the development in an interview with Christian Post. On one side, we are happy, but on the other side, we are afraid, he said, speaking on behalf of himself and another brother who also lives in Pakistan. Anjum cited January 3rd death sentence of Jafar Bhatti, another Christian imprisoned under Pakistan's blasphemy laws, as a cause of concern. While the Supreme Court of Pakistan granted Sampson bail, the legal proceedings stemming from the blasphemy charges against him will continue at the district court level. Anjum told CP, Christian Post, that trials are very dangerous because he has to go to court back and forth to attend the hearings. He recalled a 2020 incident where a Muslim accused of blasphemy was murdered right in the court, fearing that his brother could end up facing the same fate. He was murdered right in the court, Anjum said. He was on bail and he got shot dead and somebody just killed him in the courts. So, you know, the persecution, when it comes to the persecution in Pakistan, parts of India, Indonesia, against Christians, it's really, really something. All right, then last news item, then I'm done. We have, you know, this news is quite interesting because when I saw it, it's like, wow. I saw a video report of it in CBN News 2 weeks ago. And this one says that COVID passport microchip developer says there's no stopping human chipping. So towards the end of last year, technology startup Disruptive Subdermals announced a microchip installed under a skin that can be scanned to reveal COVID vaccination status. So, wow, something is boiling up somewhere. The technology was criticized, with many calling it invasive. In an interview with the Express, the company's managing director doubled down on the technology and told critics the technology was here to stay. The technology is pre-programmed and scannable. Implants about the size of a grain of rice. It stores vaccination information, displaying a person's COVID-19 vaccine passports when scanned. Speaking to Express, Hannes Jobad, the company's managing director, said, "This technology exists and is used whether we like it or not. I'm happy that it is brought into the public conversation. New technologies must be broadly debated and understood. Smart implants are a powerful health technology. This is what we are building at Disruptive, and our goal is to transform healthcare on a global scale." So, Stubart, that the man said, the technology makes the vaccine passports more accessible. This means it is always accessible for me or anyone else, really, who wants to read me. For example, if I go to the movies or go to a shopping center, then people will be able to check my status even if I don't have my phone. Once vaccines become mandatory for an entire population, vaccine passports will absolutely necessary for anyone that still wants to live anything that even resembles a normal life. Whether it is on your phone, on a card that you show, or actually embedded in your skin, you will need to take it with you wherever you go in case you are stopped by law enforcement authorities. Does any of this sound eerily familiar? It should. The book of Revelation describes a system whereby the people of the world are forced to receive a mark on their right hand or forehead. Those who refuse to comply with it cannot buy or sell, and they eventually cut off. They are killed eventually and all that. So the people wonder, are the COVID vaccines the mark of the beast written about in the book of Revelation? No. The mark of the beast will involve a conscious decision to give one's allegiance to the Antichrist. No one will accept it by mistake or for purely health reasons alone. Nevertheless, vaccine mandates and passports create a social system enabling the mark of the beast. If they are allowed to stand, they will create a mark of the beast system indistinguishable in impact from the true mark of the beast. In doing so, they will pave the way for the rise of the Antichrist and the mark of the beast, as outlined in the book of Revelation. Combine such a system with modern technology, including microchip implants, and you have a scary combination. Now is the time to become familiar with the book of Revelation and gain a better understanding of where all this is leading or heading to. Indeed, yeah. I mean, we are having parallels of what is coming ahead. The system is just being prepared towards that. The technology is being tested. In Sweden, it's largely being tested. And this company I spoke about too, they're also testing their systems. They believe it's going to be the way of the future. And see, so yes, eventually these things are going to expand. But it doesn't mean what we are seeing now is what it is in terms of the mark of the beast, because there are a whole lot of things that points clearly that is not it. I mean, study the book of Revelation yourself from top, from verse 1 down. And everything you see from verse 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, everything should happen until verse 15, 16 there. So we cannot just jump to the latter part of the chapter and say that, oh, it is happening. The previous verses all also have to happen. And you ask, when you read it, ask yourself questions. Have we seen this? Has this happened? Have we seen this? Have this happened? That's the way to study the Bible. So let's stick to the word of God, and the system is just being pointed straight towards the end we are in anyway. But clearly, these are just the beginning of things. And you should just understand these things from the biblical point of view. All right, Issues of Life is the program. I'll take a little break with the song. I'll be back after the song. Even if you're listening to this program from outside the city, outside Ghana, greetings to you as well for those online.
Now, all I have is now to be faithful, to be holy, and to shine, lighting up the darkness. Right now, I really have no choice but to voice the truth to the nations, the generation looking for God. For such a time as this, I was placed upon the earth to hear the voice of God and do His will, whatever it is. A time as this, from now and all the days He gives. I am here, and I am His, for such a time as this. Sky, right here, right here, for this time and place, you can live a mirror of His mercy, a forgiven image of grace. For such a time as this, I was placed upon the earth to hear the voice of God and to His will. Whatever it is, for such a time as this, for now and all the days He gives. I am here, and I am His, for such a time as this. Upon the earth, to hear the voice.
All right, welcome back to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. I'm Eben, and thank God for this evening. Last week, I was talking about important things we should start the year with and pay attention to a lot, and the Word of God was what I was talking about last week. And this evening, briefly before I finish off this program tonight, I want to talk about this major thing that sometimes we ignore as believers, but it makes a lot of difference in our Christian life and even in our secular life. And that's the issue with time. Time. How do we handle time? How do we see time? You know, let me read Ephesians 5, 15 to 16. That says, "See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, and the reason is because the days are evil." Redeeming the time because the days are evil. No, we live in a world system where a lot of secular things or systems have been designed to, quote unquote, waste our time. Because in the wasting of our time, that is where those who design the systems derive their money from. So the systems are meant to waste your time whilst they make money. So, example, social media. Whilst you waste your time on social media, Zuckerberg becomes a billionaire, and the billions keep increasing because as we spend more time there, depending, spend or waste, whichever way it is, it makes people rich and richer. You see, so the same entertainment. As you watch, they make money from it. Sports, as you watch, they make money from it. You see, so we have a lot of time-wasting things designed in a way that the beneficiaries are making money from it. And at the end of the day, as believers, the critical question we have to understand is, or we have the first question we have to ask ourselves is, what time is it spiritually? What time is it? You know, if you've been following what is happening in the world the last few years, you don't need any man of God, any prophet to tell you where we are spiritually. No, we don't. You see, not that we don't need them to talk, but we don't need someone to tell you the hour is very late spiritually before you believe the hour is late. And if we understand the time and the season we are in, then we should understand and see the importance of managing our time within this time frame we are in. There's a reason why God placed us on earth at this particular point in time. There's a reason. There's a reason why God allowed you and I to be born to be in this world at this time, to be alive at this time. So we should be very careful. Recently, the Holy Spirit drew my attention to something that, it was a question, the question form. Are we disappointing God for placing us on earth at this point in time? Because let's liken it to, well, in the season of football, so let me use football as a scenario. I mean, though I don't watch, but I still understand it. And I used to love it anyway, but not this time. Coaches sometimes have to make changes and bring in some good players when the match is ending. And why would they do that? For the purpose of achieving a win. Because they know the role these changes are coming in to do. See, so the last set of, the last part of a game is very important. To win a match depends on, I mean, the last part of the game is very, very, very crucial, where you'd have some coaches who can't even sit, you know, because when the tension is very high and all. We are in the last part of this whole end time stuff and all that, believe it or not. But then the question is, God didn't make a mistake. We didn't come here by just a mistake. The issue is, God didn't make a mistake. Some would ask, so did God make a mistake? No, he didn't. So he knows your capacity, he knows your potential, he knows your ability, and he knows what you can do for his kingdom for such a time as this. So why, that's why he placed you to, he planned it for you to be alive at this point in time. But now the issue is, do we see it that way, that it is very important that we use our time wisely, because we have to spend our time wisely for our master, for our king, for God? The reason why we don't see it as a priority is we are wasting our time on useless things. So eventually we have no time left for godly things. So that's why it is important we revisit the issue of time. How are we spending our time these days? And, you know, as the year has started, we set targets, we plan, we want to do this, we want to do this more this year, we want to achieve this more this year. Let's factor in the issue of time. That's why I brought it into the discussion this evening. How are we using our time? Are we wasting our time, or are we being wise with our time? No. And the critical point in Ephesians 5:16 is because the days are evil. I mean, you don't need anyone to tell you the days are evil. And naturally, the days are very evil. So we cannot waste our time. We have to walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Could it be that we are walking as fools and not as wise? Well, that's an individual question to answer. But let's redeem the time, because we cannot be using the time we used, the way we've been using it in previous years, and expect a different result this year. We should be determined to cut some things off this time around. I mean, if your social media is wasting your time, no, you assess yourself, analyze yourself. What are the time wasters in my life? For some, it is social media. For some, it is movies and entertainment. For some, it is sports. For others, it is friends, bad company, and all that. For others, it is maybe sleeping, oversleeping. I mean, there are some who just love to sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep. For some, it is just idling around, not doing anything, just calling this person, visiting this person, useless talk. I mean, all those things. You see, assess yourself. What is the time waster, or the time, what are the time wasters in your life? And now deal with them this year, head on. Because the days are evil, and the days are going to get very evil. That one is a fact, I'm telling you. This year is, I mean, we are going to see things. That one is obvious. We are going to see things. And as evil is increasing, we cannot go on wasting our time. We have to channel our time into more fruitful ventures and even more eternally minded ventures. Because you see, we are seeing clearly the season and the time. But why? The question is, why are we not bothered about doing something about how we waste our time? It's as if we see, oh yeah, we are in the end time. Things are getting this. But then still, we are living just as we are living. We know the time is, the hour is late. And still, we are living the same way we are living. We are doing the same things we are doing, which are not helping us spiritually to grow. We are doing the same things which are drawing back into sin every time. The cycle of sin is still on, because we just don't understand the implication of time. If we understand the seriousness of time wastage, because time is such a valuable resource that, you see, let's even look at the secular aspect. The time that someone uses to be rich is the same time the poor person too has access to. The same, we all have the same 24 hours. But of course, other factors and, you know, come in and all that. But everything is about time. The value of time. So, but my emphasis is on more of the spiritual aspect of time. How well are we utilizing our time spiritually? if you can spend 3 hours on social media one day, and yet your prayer life is just hovering around 10 minutes of prayer in a day, there is a huge disparity. There's something wrong with you. You must deal with the time on social media. You can watch these soap operas and series and all that. You see, look at this issue of series, entertainment, the movies and all, how they've designed it in the seasonal form. So, you see, you are hooked with season one, episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are hooked with, so you have to continue spending time. It's all draining our time. So we have to renew our minds and see the importance of time and start cutting some things off. For some, you can manage. Some are disciplined enough to be able to reduce. So some, fine. I mean, they won't leave social media, but they can control themselves and manage to reduce the time they spend there. But if you know you have a problem that you can't even manage it, then just close the account and leave there. For some, they can control themselves and say, okay, I used to watch 10 hours. Now I'll just watch 1 hour. If you have that ability, okay, all well and good. But if you know you don't have that ability, then turn off completely. You see, because there are some who just start something and the power to say no becomes difficult. So now it's like, oh, well, okay. Then they are on, then back to the same cycle of wastage again. But we should learn and master the courage and learn to say no to some things this time around. Let's say no. Let's learn to say no. Your friends are just wasting time. Oh, your friend calls you. Oh, are you there? Okay, let's go. Go and I'm going to a phone now. Can you go and just accompany me to the place? Then, oh, okay, I'll go. Then you just dress up. You have nothing doing, so you are just going, moving, wastage of time. This year, we shouldn't entertain those time wasters in our lives. There are some friends. If you want your Christianity or your walk with the Lord to be stable and progressive, you must of a necessity cut them off your life. Because if you retain those friends in your address book, you keep them as your friends. I'm not saying that don't talk to them, be at loggerheads and, you know, no. But if you, how far you give them access to your life, it's affecting you. You know that this friend is just wasting my time. So why are you continue to entertain the person then? So just learn to say no. We should learn to say no this year to any time we start in our lives, be it a system, be it an application, be it entertainment, be it sports, be it friends, be it sleep, whatever. Whatever it is, assess yourself, examine yourself, and now identify any time waster in your life and say no to it. Because we have to now make more time to pray. We have no excuse. We have to make more time to pray more, because this year we should be praying more. Because of what is coming this year, we should be praying more. Oh yeah, we should be praying more this year as believers. But prayer takes time. So if you don't have the time or you don't create the time to pray, how can you pray? This year we should be studying the word of God more. But reading, studying, meditation happens over a period of time. So if you don't create the time for it, how can you do it? We should be doing more spiritual things. But everything is based on time. So if we don't make time for it, then how can we make time to do what we think we want to do spiritually? So my emphasis this evening is the importance of time. Let's be wise with how we are going to spend our time this year, because it's going to be very, very critical for us, because the time we spend on useful ventures will be to our advantage. The time we spend on spiritually minded things will be to our advantage. The time we waste on useless things that we gain nothing, just appealing to the fleshly things, if we don't cut those times off, down the line, we realize we've wasted our life on some things. But then time wasted is gone. You can't do anything about it. It's like water that you pour on the ground. I mean, there's no way you can retrieve it again. It's gone. It's gone. For some, if you look back, even your life, you look back, you realize you wasted time, you wasted your days as a youth, you wasted your days as a teenager. I mean, you look back, realize time, we've wasted time in some time, in some things. You can't do anything about it. At worst, you can cry, but it won't change anything. But let's look forward into the future. The history is gone. You can't do anything. But forward is what, by the grace of God, we'll have life. We'll look forward to life, the days ahead, the months ahead, the years ahead. That is what we can do something about. And it's all based on time. How you waste the time or how you spend the time. How fruitful you become with the time you have, or how wasteful you become with the time you have. And lastly, as I round up to this evening's edition of Issues of Life, I mean, for those, maybe you've not been listening for some time, it's now 90 minutes, so it's now 8 to 9:30. And the issue of accountability is where we have to be very one we should worry and be concerned about. Because, you see, we are going to give account of our time. Oh yes, we are going to give account of our time. And, you know, sometimes we think we can just waste our lives and all that. But please, we will give an account of our time. So let's look at the talents issue, Matthew 25, where he gave the talents. We all know, I mean, so I need not read again. Let's read it yourself. Matthew 25, where it talks of the talents, the 1, 2, 5 talents. The issue of the talents, or the parable of the talents, was over a period of time. How they use the talents was within a time frame. So even the one who buried it and said, I knew you were a hard man and reaping where you've not sown, type of all these things, excuses to give. The master said, at least you should have invested it. Investment is over a period of time. At least that investment would have yielded some dividends, if not at all. So, you see, so the issue of, they were able to utilize their talents over a period of time. So when they were given accounts of the talents they were given, it's an indirect way of saying they were given an account of their time. So I gave you 2 talents. What did you do within or with the 2 talents? Indirectly means within the time frame, the time I gave it to you, and now that you are given an account of it, how did you use the 2 talents? You see, so the 5, the same. It was a period of time. Whatever they achieved was achieved over a period of time. And that time frame is what we should have in our minds, that we also give accounts of our stewardship to the king. How did we use our gifts? How did we utilize our callings? How did we utilize our whatever God gave us, whatever we were led to do, whatever we should have done? How did we do it over the period of time? In that period of time, that expanse of time, varies for everyone. Somebody is 10 years, somebody is 40 years, somebody is 80, 90, 80, whatever years. That period of time, how are you using it? How did you use it? Let's even shorten it to the period where you got to know Christ. So you get, I mean, give account to your, that period. How have you used that time frame? But you see, we cannot cry over spilled milk, but we can make use of whatever short time that is left available, or whatever time we have available, to do whatever we should have done in previous times that we failed to do, by overworking within that period, the time frame that we have available. So let's forget about the past and let's press on with the mindset that we are going to give account one day. How well can we give account? Are we going to hear thou good and faithful servant? Well done, welcome. That should be our ambition, that should be our target, that should be our driving force, that motivates us that we want to hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." The faithfulness of being a steward of God, a servant of God, a child of God, that faithfulness happens over a period of time. But how are we utilizing that time? If we waste that time, can you be told faithful? Is it so? Please, let's reflect on the issue of time, how we have done it over the times past and all, and correct ourselves. Good night, and God bless you.